This is MetaDama, a holistic view on data management in the Nordics. Welcome, my name is Winfried and thanks for joining me for this episode of MetaDama. Our vision is to promote data management as a profession in the Nordics, show the competencies that we have, and that is the reason I invite Nordic experts in data and information management for a talk. Welcome to our newest episode of MetaDama. I'm really happy to have with me two enthusiastic data people from Norway. We have Aiko Yamashita and Karl-Axel Fester. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Winfred.
So today we want to talk about demand side or demand driven data management. And that is a notion that comes from an agile point of view where you try to have a focus on providing value to the customer. And that is our highest outcome. So for our field of data and data management, the notion of demand side data quality has been around for a couple of years now. And that is a notion that the consumer of the data decide what quality and what quality dimensions they need to create value with the data. So the question is, can we widen that approach to data management in general and maybe to a data management as a service? Can we put data management into a chain of custody where data management is a service to data science and data science is a service to the business? And I hope that Aiko and Karl-Axel can have some answers here and maybe come with some examples from DNB as well. Would you like to introduce yourself before we get started?
You first, Aiko?
Absolutely. So thank you very much, Winfred, for inviting us to have this really interesting discussion. As you said, my name is Aiko Yamashita, and I am a senior data scientist at the Center of Excellence in Advanced Analytics at DNB. And I have a PhD in empirical software engineering. So I did spend a lot of time with numbers and experiments involving developers, actually, and measuring different aspects of software quality in terms of product and the process itself. I had experience in finance, logistics domain mainly, and I've been working in many different countries before I arrived to Norway. So yeah, I've been here and there, working as a consultant, software engineer, and the latest years as a data scientist after my PhD.
Yes, and my name is Karl-Axel. I'm heading the department, the advanced analytics department in DNB. I'm educated as an economist and actually worked in the bank for a lot of years. So I'm more in the usual suspect when it comes to banking people. But I've always been working with data, both as an analyst and also as a manager for the last couple of years.
Karl-Axel, when was the first time you got in contact with Dama?
I think it's a couple of years ago because DNB is supporting the Dama organization. And of course, data management has been an important topic the last couple of years. So I think we were actually present when we started Dama in Norway. We heard of it a couple of years.
And I think with your background, Aiko, you have been in touch with Dama a couple of times through the years.
Yes, absolutely. So I have been in touch with mainly the Norwegian Computing Society or the Norsk Dataforening. I've been lucky enough to be a presenter in one of their conferences. So even before I started with DNB, I knew your work. And now we are also have the opportunity to work closer thanks to Maria, who is now the chair of the Dama division in Norway, who is luckily our colleague in DNB.
Fantastic. And Aiko will also present at the Dama EMEA conference 1st of December.
Fantastic. Great news. Thank you so much, Winfred. What a great place to announce it. Really looking forward.
So let's deep dive into the topic. But before we do that, I think we should have some definitions out there. And there is a certain difference between data science and analytics and statistics, machine learning, even business intelligence. All those terms get tossed around a bit. So I would like to try to define them together with you.
Yeah, and this is a question I get often. And I teach a course on data science at Oslo Met. Oslo Metropolitan University. And this is one of the first things I start with my students. So I would like to see, let's start with data science, because it's actually kind of the most recent term, in my view. For me, data science is more of an umbrella term that covers knowledge, tools, systems, and methods, mainly for extracting knowledge and insights from data. And the data can be structured, unstructured. It doesn't really matter, right? So I think that under this umbrella, you could find all sorts of different disciplines and methods, empirical experimental methods or scientific methods, such as, you know, inference, statistical inference or statistics, and the more computer science related methods, such as machine learning, which are more based on algorithmic approaches to getting this insight and understanding of natural phenomena. I think machine learning has traditionally more of a pragmatic approach or maybe a utilitarian approach, in the sense that it's primarily used to perform predictions and to solve problems. While fields like statistics and especially fields in social sciences and economics also are more interested on understanding the underlying mechanisms, why. So they're more interested in asking why things happen and why these factors affect the outcomes. As I mentioned, machine learning is more towards, I don't really care how, but it happens, right? And this is how we can predict or can solve the problem.
And I think that's really good, Aku, because we have this discussion in DNB on modeling versus more direct data-driven approaches. So that also goes into the ability to explain the solutions that we are building. And we also see that we have people educated from different schools with a slightly different approach to this. And it creates some sort of a vibrant discussion internally also on how to approach the problems.
Absolutely agree with you. And this is also one of the reasons why diversity is so important, not only in terms of educational background, but personal experiences, socioeconomical background, gender, and you name it, because they all bring in their input in order to find the best possible solution.
Yeah, a really interesting point. And we talked a bit about that when we prepared for this podcast, that all three of us have a different background. I studied history when I went to university. And one of the main things you learn in history studies is critical thinking and critical evaluation of sources. And that is an important skill and analytic skill that you can bring into data science as well. So I think it is important that we have that approach where we bring in a lot of different knowledge areas and different sciences.
I totally agree with you. And actually, well, we've been throwing this course. Probably you may mention Cassie Korsko later on, but we've been kind of teaching inside DMB this course, which we have called data-driven decision making, and it's kind of rebranding a DMB version of decision intelligence, in the sense that we need to teach critical thinking and logical reasoning as foundations for driving any sort of innovation or technology driven improvements or any sort of improvements that you would like to see in an organization. It has been a really uphill journey, but also very rewarding when things start to sort of click and make sense for people. And we've been working mainly on operational people who are working closely to data and our products. But our plan is also to hopefully make a version that is addressed to decision makers and managers. Because I think that the people who are consuming the insights are also having a critical view towards the information they are being fed, and also are asking the right questions to be solved, particularly not trying to dig for evidence to confirm their own biases. That's an extremely important task we are sort of trying to engage with.
I think you are moving into a really interesting topic here, data literacy, and how can we offer self-service for data, and how can we offer data democratization without having that literacy part in place. it's a hard topic. But to give some more background on decision intelligence, we are always looking to the big companies like Google for how do they approach these things. And the decision intelligence is one of the things that I think is really interesting, because this is how can we understand the information in a better way in our business. Cassie, as you mentioned, is the head of the decision intelligence in Google, and she's really good at communicating the value of analytics, the value of statistics. So I wanted just to go to some of the statements together with you and see what your take is on that. So first of all, Cassie says that if you just do statistics without analytics, you get really good answers to the wrong question. So her approach is that analytics is how you get good questions, and statistics is how you get good answers. How do you see that, Kalaxa?
I actually struggle a bit with those statements because they are quite hard, but I can understand where they actually come from, because if she had been working in Google, it's a really strong engineering culture, and they actually believe strongly in the ability to find these kind of patterns. So they don't correspond that well with the thinking in banking, where we more see that this is actually tools to support some of the initiatives and some of the insight that we actually want to grasp. But of course, I totally agree that statistics in its own doesn't help us much. So we need the domain knowledge. We need the good questions. We need to understand why are we asking these questions and how can we actually use and interpret the different results. So this is, for me, to take a more holistic perspective on why are you doing analytics and what are you actually able to achieve. And we see that we have a lot of discussions on where can you actually apply analytics, where is it legal to do it, where is it sound, where does it correspond to the expectations from the customers. So I think we have these kind of discussions more into the DNA in DNB than there may be in some of the Silicon Valley companies.
I totally agree with Kalaxel. So I think that it doesn't really matter how we call it. We can call it analytics and then statistics. But in general, I think it's just about the being critical about the problems you have at hand and being able to choose the right tools and right methods in order to be able to answer or solve that problem. And I think it all starts by the ability of a team or individual to be able to define and understand both the problem at hand and how is it connected also to their high-end goals, because I think people are very easily stuck in solving one kind of problem and then they lose sight of what is the main objective of either the organization or their team. Or even worse, they are stuck on a certain approach, a certain solution, without really thinking, is this question worth answering? Is this problem worth solving? And then you could, once you have done that, then you can actually start even discussing on what are the best possible methods. Should we use statistics? Should we use interviews? Should we use sort of qualitative or quantitative or a mix of both, in order to get the possible answer? And one more thing is, like, I think the analysis always should be focused on factors that we can also change and control somehow, because otherwise it's not actionable. If you're not able to sort of influence the outcome, well, you can still understand why it happens, but then it's not very, maybe there's not much you can do about it. So I think it's also a really important thing that you formulate a problem in such a way that you have levers that you can turn in order to influence a certain outcome.
How do we get from the analysis to the insight? And how do we get from the insight to an actionable delivery? Kalaxa?
Yeah, for me, this has been a maturity journey also working in DNB, because earlier on, we were quite satisfied. If we had a business problem, we were able to get the data and produce insight and then present it to an audience so they actually could think about it, what should we do, and these kind of things. Often then they tended to ask, are we able to get these kind of reports and insight more often? But now we are moving into more actionable insight. How are we able to actually deploy it into our processes? Are we able to scale it and so on? So for me, this is a maturity journey when it comes to using data. But we see all these patterns in DNB. We have a lot of people producing insight for taking manual decisions. We have a lot of people working with data to produce insight into tools, so we can actually empower people taking decisions. And we are also starting to embed these kind of insights directly into customer-facing solutions. Just as an example, we have this app provided to the corporate customers where we're able to actually provide liquidity prognosis to end customers. So 10 years ago, we would have been quite satisfied if we were able to actually produce that to a relationship manager that can bring this on a printed slide to the customer and say, this is what we are able to produce. You can get a new one in 1 year, but now we are able to actually provide it directly to the end customers. So, but in a data quality and data management context, this is also part of the journey, because when you have these human filters, you are able to actually reduce when you have bad data quality and so on. So, but when we are presenting it directly to end customers or integrating it into the processes, then of course the data quality and a lot of aspects when it comes to data management is more important.
I totally agree with you, Axel. And I think that it has been a really exciting journey for DNB, going from floating and loosely connected PDF reports and PowerPoint slides into sort of analytical web applications that are distributed and accessible to our customer advisors, right? That they can be used in order to make better decisions on credit loans or other activities. And a good example is actually, we have implemented a graph database using Neo4j. And this was used as a sort of engine, database engine, in order to create a series of visualizations that have helped the AML division in order to shorten their analysis from weeks to a day or a couple of days at most. And this is a huge improvement given the time pressure that AML teams undergo in terms of detecting suspicious activities and therefore, you know, withholding DNB's obligation to avoid
money laundering. So
money
laundering, I think that's a really powerful case, Aiko. And you see that the data scientists are already preparing for actually using this in operational systems also. Because Absolutely. That's some sort of their end goal. You want to automate things and you want to scale it. But the improvement for the organization is huge by actually be able to provide this kind of visualizations and reports. So it's quite interesting to see, but the data scientists are pushing for using it even further and even more into the operational systems.
And one interesting aspect here is that data scientists are working ever closely with business people. And I think this is essential because then we can sort of bridge the gap between what people know that is possible to do and also understand better the limitations. I think we are still in this journey where decision makers and demand owners need to understand what are the things that are possible to do with AI and data and analytics, and what are still the limitations in terms of technology. So having people working closer, ever closer with one another, that's part of actually making this insight to action sort of more synergetic and pushing forward the data agenda in DNB.
And you, Carl Axel, mentioned it right in the beginning. One of the pre-requirements for doing all that work is good data quality. Mm. And there we are in the middle of the topic, demand-side data management. First of all, demand-side data management requires a demand. So there's someone who has to demand a good data management, or someone who has to have a demand on a good data quality. Who is that? Is that the business, or is that data science and analytics?
Yeah. In DNB, you have a lot of people consuming data. And of course, they have demands, and then it's more for us to actually prioritize. So we see that all the business units have data scientists, but they also have data consumers quite broadly. and also in the support units, they are really heavy data users and have been that for decades. If you take the risk department in DNB, it's rather big, and it's a mature organization that has been working with data for a long time. So we see that we have a lot of people demanding data. I would say it's more immature when it comes to produce data and actually how to figure out how to organize the business when it comes to data. So one aspect, as an economist, I see this as a some sort of economic problem. You have data which is it's consumable and it doesn't is it depreciate when people use it. So it's some sort of a common good. So and in economics, it's really hard to actually figure out how to provide the right amount of a common good.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and I think that everyone is demanding demand management. Everyone is crying out for demand management because when it comes to data quality, analytics, and even machine learning operations or MLOps, basically this is a wicked problem, right? From a mathematical perspective and social perspective, because it has many times contradictory requirements. How do you weigh GDPR against confidentiality or against ethical principles, fairness, right? And many times a lot of these requirements may go against each other. And it's obviously data is a common good, as Kalaxa mentions, which has many different stakeholders and many different kinds of values. And therefore you need to have an agility. You need to be agile and nimble in order to be able to sort out this wicked problem. You cannot have a fixed or static process. You have to be nimble in order to be able to adapt and respond to new information that may come from one day to another. And a really good example is the accelerated rate in which for instance, the European Union is demanding more information from financial institutions on their green portfolio, on how aligned their portfolio is with respect to Paris agreement. And this happened almost from one day to another, in the same way as happened with GDPR a couple of years ago. So priorities are shifting and changing constantly. And therefore, DNB saw a very important aspect to implement this kind of mindset through demand management.
So let me ask you more or less directly, how much effort does it take to secure good data? And how much effort does it take to enrich your data in a way that you can be compliant?
Correction, this one is for you. Huh?
Yeah, I understand. So I would say it's really costly. Yeah, so we are actually a lot of people in DNB working on preparing data and making them available for different processes. I would say a couple of hundreds, and also storing this data and processing it, it's really costly. So of course, for looking into efficiency, we need to think, how are we able to do this even smarter and more and cheaper going forward? So because we are not able to take all the data grows exponentially, and we can't scale the cost with the same pace as the amount of data. So we need to be able to do it much cheaper for amount of terabyte that we are storing. So, and that has been, it's some sort of a struggle in DNB because you have more consumers, you have a broader scope when it comes to data, more various types, but you have to some extent the same resource pool when it comes to actually producing quality data. One thing is the quality, but also the ability to input into operational systems, because it's much more costly to provide data or insight into an operational system than just producing a report, because then you are able to fail. But for most of those systems, you need a lot of disaster recovery solutions and high availability and the 24/7 and all these kind of things that actually drives cost also. Yeah, so we should just accept that this is rather costly. And if we are not aiming to actually use the data, we should most likely just delete them. So that would have been the cheap approach if you didn't have an ambition plan for using data in your processes. then it's much about deleting and deleting and deleting, because you take some sort of an operational risk by storing and processing this data, especially when it's if it's business sensitive or personal data.
I think there are different aspects to data cost. And as you mentioned, there's a cost of storage. There's a liability cost of having data that you shouldn't have. But there's also a value proposition in the data. And I think you can probably, if you have a good understanding of your data value chain, you can see what data should be managed and what data should be managed at the highest quality.
Yeah.
How is that approached in DMB?
Yeah, I think that data management has been steered by critical areas. And I think one of the most critical areas that we've been focusing our efforts with respect to data quality is actually the AML part. Because definitely has been a lot of issues with cases that were not able to be caught and ended up also in the press. And of course, this does a good punch into the trust and credibility of DMB as a solid institution. So it has been a lot of focus in the recent months around the work on AML. And I think that it will be probably in the future, it will be very similar high focus on the environmental and ESG, environment, society, and governance data, and sustainability reports and non-financial disclosure reporting, for which we do have a quite a wide customer portfolio. So I think these areas are going to be very important, and probably they're going to drive the effort. However, of course, we need to make a very critical balance between sort of compliance and sort of compliance reporting, and also keep our growth steady and try to leverage these analytics for driving growth. And one good example is the way how we are improving our transactional data. And there's a lot of exciting things happening around us amongst others, the BIPs, merger and the fusion at the same time, which also for which we do have an important role to play and collaborate in the future, I think. But at any rate, transactional data is one of the main areas, at least for growth, that we are looking into. And it has a huge potential for new services and different insights in terms of value. So there are both things. One is compliance, and it's not a matter of if, but it's a matter of how fast can we do it. And at the same time, keep your competitive edge by leveraging kinds of data, transactional data.
One more thing I wanted to argue on data storage costs. We had a bit of a discussion on that in the previous episode on data security. There is a call it for dark data in our data world. There's a huge amount of data that is collected for mostly compliance reasons that we would never use for analysis. That is in our systems. We are not quite sure where it resides, what volume it is. We're not quite sure what we could use it for, if there's any liability linked to it. Is that a problem that is known to DMB? And is that a problem that you are facing?
Yeah, and I think we are trying to address it, because in a GDPR context, you can't actually have this kind of dark data, especially when it's personal data, because the customers can actually request what kind of data do you have stored on me. And then we actually see that we are able to input data science methods into reducing the amount of dark data. I can give you a small example when we are trying to leverage NLP technologies to understand its emails and its unstructured documents, to actually be able to extract if it's personal identifiable information in those documents, and then actually delete them accordingly to GDPR. So I think that's part of the journey. If we are to store these amounts of data, we need to leverage data science techniques to actually be able to store and handle this data legally.
And also, I think that organizational wise, we have gone also really far when it comes to procedures for documenting purpose. I think that's extremely important that we do. Now we have a very good procedure for connecting different data sources with different purposes and usages. and we have a good documentation. What is the legal basis or other basis that can be used to argue for the correct, not only legal, but ethical usage of data. And this is one of the most important things I think we are working on as a bank right now when it comes to data.
Totally agree, Aiko.
Let me argue a thought here. In the data world, we use a lot of energy on data visualization, on data storytelling. We make an effort to show our value to the business. But not in every organization you see that the business is actually changing their ways of working. Would you say that data management and analytics is part of the business? Are we creating any value ourselves, or are we just providing insight for others to create value?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And we have focused a lot on culture and also on value creation and documentation. So I think that we are starting to move in the right direction when it comes to, of course, we have the data scientists primarily working in the business units, and then they are measured on value creation. And also we have data owners. So my hope going forward is that we will start seeing data as a more, not tangible, but an intangible asset with some sort of a value connected to how usable is it, what quality, and so on. So we are starting to move in that direction. But of course, when you approach data, it's both into compliance and it's also into value creation. And you have to balance these two. And often you see that if you have good data quality, you are actually able to deliver on both. And that is how we see data. So when Aiko is talking about transactional data, if we have really good quality, high availability on this data, we could actually use those data into both compliance processes, but also into more sales-oriented processes. So it's two different purposes. What you are doing with the data is mainly the same. It's not 100% the same, but there are some scaling effects here.
I also want to add that I really like this data quality model that Intuit, this fintech company in Silicon Valley, has when they describe their journey to developing a data mesh. And they basically have four principles: data discoverability, how easy it is to discover the data; data understandability, how can I understand the data; data trust and stability; and availability in terms of consumability. How can I consume it? And I think that once we have these four things in place, when we start developing our data products, I am very confident that not only value creation and compliance are going to be positively affected, but also productivity. And that is a huge thing. And it definitely goes very often under the radar when it comes to KPIs considered by management. Because productivity is a difficult metric, but definitely indirectly the effects are going to be felt throughout the organization.
Totally agree, and we see that we are to some extent starting to melt down the difference between operational and analytical data. And for me, that's also core into having a proper ownership and having people able and willing to actually use time on creating data products with a high quality and availability.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in that whole data mesh approach, that you can bring the data closer to the business, but also the business closer to the data. Mm-hmm. So one last question I wanted to ask you is, in between analytics, data science, and data management, we talked about how good data management can help analytics and data science, but how can analytics and data science support good data management?
Yeah, so one of the example that we brought in was the NLP case, to actually leverage data science methods into finding this kind of dark data, and then you are also able to actually do something about it. We are participating in a initiative called Cleanup. It's funded by the Norwegian Computing Center, Norsk Regnesentral. And then they're actually trying to anonymize unstructured text. So of course, if you are able to first leverage NLP technologies to find PII information in these kind of dark pools of data, and you're also able to leverage machine learning techniques to reduce and anonymize these kind of data that you don't want to have in there, you could be able to produce anonymous data sets, which would be much easier to actually store and to process. So, and also we see a lot of work being in what is called like this knowledge kind of privacy, graph. Yeah, privacy solutions and knowledge graphs, of course. So we see that it's starting to melt together.
Thank you both for a fantastic talk. Is there anything you wanted to tell our listeners before we close the session? Any message?
Yeah, well, so I think that we are really excited with the direction that DNB is going towards when it comes to ethical usage of AI and data. And I think that we have something to celebrate internally too in our section and the division. And that is that in the most recent document on sustainable strategy of DNB, which was released maybe a couple of weeks ago, we could contribute to some of the content into the sustainable strategy. And I think DNB can be proud to be one of the few financial institutions who have the word AI into it. Because we have also as a goal to leverage AI and data in order to accelerate the transition to a green economy and also confirm once again that we are committed to use both data and AI for driving inclusive, democratic, and just society. And on these kind of sentences were included in our strategy document, and this is really exciting for us.
Absolutely. And for me, this is a picture about the maturity that we are starting to reach when it comes to both data and also AI. So it's really good to see that we are starting to accept that data is core to DNB. And we also see a lot of good journeys when it comes to the more operational IT department also, acknowledging that the data is key going forward. So, and also to the DAMA Society, I would say that data management is also key going forward. It will be a key competence for almost all big businesses. So we are really happy to see that this is broadening out in Norway and that we have voices in this domain.
This is a fantastic acknowledgement of the value of data and the value of AI. Fantastic. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.